from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffs.
Hit man! Oh, what a one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom.
Hey, you got this?
There?
Oh, yes!
Hello,
Mr. Graham!
And welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks, episode 35, back by popular demand. At least two people on Twitter requested it. Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, how are you today?
Doing pretty well. I'd rather have two people requesting it than zero. So
I got no people saying, boy, we could sure use less Dusty Rhodes. So I think that that's really a positive on the whole.
I'm certainly taking it that way.
Yeah, yeah. That's
how Thank you, Twitter.
Thank you, Twitter. Shout out to Twitter. You know, normally I like to start the show maybe with like a little bit of news, a little bit of what's going on around here, but I'm not going to do that today because we have a tendency when we talk to run out of time. So we're gonna skip over all of that,
oh.
And we're just gonna kind of get into what we gotta get to here. I'll start by saying that we every time we do Cleats and Cufflinks, there is an impromptu feel to it. I think because largely we. May forget what we were supposed to talk about, and not just you, but anybody that I talk to. It's probably me.
There's a common denominator, is what you're saying.
I have an ability to make something seem unscripted, even when, in actuality, there is some work that goes on behind it some of the time. Part of that, in our case, is usually a conversation either the day before or before. Mm-hmm. So yesterday, we had a beverage or two, mm-hmm. And we talked for a bit. And the thing that came up first, though, which most people will not be surprised, was basketball.
Yes.
So you went to a game, what, two nights ago?
Whatever day Wednesday night was, however long that ago that
right,
was.
Yeah, it's, I think two.
When you don't sleep that well, it doesn't really make a difference, day, night. In any case, the Warriors were coming to visit the Washington Wizards. I have Wizard season tickets because I live outside of D.C., and there are no other NBA teams in the area.
Wow, yeah. That is a ringing endorsement for the Wizards.
You know, the Wizards are what they are. Like, over the 5 years that I've had these tickets, they've grown on me. Watching John Wall play has been fantastic. He's a very good leader. He's got he does a lot of the intangible things, plays excellent defense on opposing point guards, which brings me to one of the things that happened during that specific game. The opposing point guard was Steph Curry.
Mm.
And if you've been paying attention to NBA basketball at all over the last 2 years, year and a half, or anything, Steph Curry is doing things that haven't really been done in basketball before, and he's doing them every single night. So one of the pieces of that is what the Golden State Warriors have done before their home games is they open up the arena 2 hours before the game starts so that people can come in and watch Steph's warm-ups. Generally at arenas, they open arenas an hour and a half beforehand. That's kind of the league standard. It's just so you can go in and watch normal warm-ups, a little shoot around.
So they're tossing in an extra half hour.
Yeah.
And this is for people who aren't tailgating heavily.
And specifically, Curry warms up a little bit earlier, has a whole routine, and it's a crowd-pleasing routine. It's almost as much for show as it is for him, although I'm sure he wouldn't phrase it that way.
Right. So but he's raining in shots. People
yeah,
are enjoying
so it's,
the experience.
And it's its own performance on some level. So when I went down there to go to this game, I generally show up an hour beforehand if I can, because I like watching some of this stuff. But I tried to show up 2 hours beforehand. I couldn't get in. Not only was no one opening the doors, there weren't even people at the door that I usually go in. And there was a line at some of the doors, but no one was moving. So I was like, all right, I'll come back and check at an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Still no movement. Came back and checked in an hour and 20. Still no movement. An hour and 15. Still no movement. And the lines are just growing around the block from all of the entrances. So you've got this situation.
Because everybody wants in.
Exactly. You've got the situation where everybody wants the thing that you have right inside those doors. And for some reason, the Wizards on that particular night didn't open up their doors in time. It's not too bad because I did still get to see Steph Curry score 51 points that night.
It's not a bad
25
night.
In the first quarter.
Oh my God.
And it was this experience where even the Wizards fans in attendance were gasping audibly at things that Curry was doing and were like making these little noises where you're like, oh, I didn't know he could do that. So you've got this sort of environment that's great, but it's supposed to start before the game in this specific instance. And the inability for that to happen in a specific environment where everyone knows that that's what should be happening is a little bit of a failure on the Wizards' part. But, I mean, that game...
Still a worthwhile game.
It was transcendent. He's a transcendent talent.
Yeah, I saw your
There's
tweet afterward,
like
and I don't have it verbatim. I should have written it down. But I remember thinking, like, yeah, I saw the other day I was watching SportsCenter or something, and I saw that he had had a rough shooting game, and he had scored like only 32 points or something. I can't remember what it was. but yes, astonishing player. And what I think that is most interesting about it, and something that we want to get into and talk about, is the fact that, you know, not only is this a professional player who's warming up 2+ hours before a game, right? He's getting in there, he has his routine, his things he's doing. But it's interesting enough that people want to go see what he's doing.
Yeah.
And I think that that got us talking about warm-ups, routines, pre-game stuff in general, and kind of the interesting shapes that that takes.
And just to start that a little bit, I would say that one of the best ways to learn about the different MLU teams at these games is to show up early, see what they do in warm-ups, see how the teammates interact with each other, see what the interactions with the coaches are. And you can get a really good view of that and just learn a little bit more about the personalities as well as the skills and as well as the expectations that each team has. I think it's a great environment if you're interested in learning more about this sport.
Yeah, and you were talking about this. I think you're absolutely right, by the way, too. And when we're going to get into a little bit more of what MLU warm-up looks like, because mm-hmm. there are some interesting factors there. But we were talking, too, about like there's kind of like, I guess you had laid it out in kind of three sections mm-hmm. of what entails kind of a pregame process. Do you want to lay those out first, and then we'll get into some detail?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's obviously the physical thing. Like, you have your skills and all of that. I consider that just a standard warm-up.
Like warming up the muscles, yeah. Whatever it is you're doing.
And there's any number of ways you can do that. But aside from that, there are sort of three separate things that I tend to break warm-ups into. And the first is superstition, which is just kind of obvious.
Some of my most fun.
Because you can think of that, and you can think of people that you knew who did strange things or things that you do yourself. Then you have interaction, so that's like things that you do with your teammate, whether it's just giving like a little handshake, saying a couple words that kind of remind you that you're in this game state, doing a little drill with somebody, just anything where it's routine, where it's a routine that you do with other people, separate from your general physical warm-up.
Smacking each other in the face.
Oh, absolutely. Pushing each other. It all just depends on what the personality of you and your teammates are.
Yep, okay.
And then the other one is meditation. So that's what you do with yourself, your own individual preparation. I don't need to talk to you to do that. I just have to get myself right. And for some people, all they have to do is walk onto the field, and they're right.
And they're there.
But for others of us, it takes a little bit more. You have to separate yourself from the world previous to ultimate, and then you're stepping onto the field. How is that different? How do you want to change that?
Yeah, because generally the kind of competitive instincts of a defender are not welcome in the day-to-day office space. You know, if someone's going to pick up a fax, you box them out, you take the fax.
It's not even particularly welcome.
I don't know why you use fax. How old am I?
It's not even particularly welcome on the offensive side of the disc always. So like the guys who are pushing each other, like getting really physical before the games, those don't tend to be the offensive players.
Yeah, generally not. Yeah, there's a certain calmness that's maybe.
So that's it's establishing this mind state both for yourself and for your team that you do through these sorts of acts. Do you have any particular entertaining superstitions or rituals that you felt bore specific mention?
Well, I think that's where we need to go back. So now we're going to go back to these things you were talking about. Look, we can get into the sort of physical aspects a little bit. I think we'll talk about that when we talk about the MLU teams warming mm-hmm. up because it's definitely interesting. But to be frank, we're not necessarily the most well-equipped to talk about the science behind how one warms up muscles.
Not a trainer.
Not a trainer. Very almost antagonistic toward trainers who told me what I was supposed to be doing. My fault. But no, there's definitely stuff that I think is really interesting in terms of like, it's not even so much superstition as it is, well, it is superstition, but it's ritual, right? There's this, and I admire ritual not so much for its prescription, the idea that proscription, that's different. It's prescription, like you have to do this or you have to, but more for its ability to transition you from one mode of thinking, one mode of focus to another, right? So I know like Khalif El-Salam out in Seattle mm-hmm. eats a bag of hot Cheetos before every game. Are hot Cheetos good for the performance in an Ultimate Frisbee game? No offense to Cheetos, they may be a potential sponsor, I don't want to get in the way, but probably not like recommended dietary preparation for a game.
Well, you've got some simple carbohydrates in there, so you're going to give yourself a little bit of fuel, but you've got all that other, I don't even know what goes into Cheetos, honestly.
Especially the hot variety.
Well, they just have hot plants. And they grow
they grow on the hot plant. I didn't know. but the point is it has very little to do with nutrition, right?
Yeah.
But it's a reset. As silly as it might be or as strange as it might be, it's, you know, you have your day leading up to the point where you eat the hot Cheetos, and then you have what you do after you eat them. Now, I would be interested to know and interested to talk to him about it. Does he eat them otherwise?
Or is it just then?
Like, yeah. If he has them for lunch one day, does he have a much more, like, intense competitive afternoon?
Well, and that brings to mind some of the teammates that I had who would only drink caffeine on tournament weekends. So they wouldn't drink coffee or anything like that during the week.
Whoa.
And then on Saturday morning, they would have a cup of coffee. They'd get all fired up. And then later on during the day, you'd sort of dose yourself with caffeine. This is the performance enhancer that everyone knows about.
The caffeine performance enhancing drug, not outlawed, I don't think, by any governing body
at
this point.
I actually think there's a certain level past which you're not supposed to go in specific competitions.
Oh, I guess that would make sense.
I'm not a doping expert.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, so we've again wandered into unqualified territory.
So we go.
Yeah.
But the sort of the way that all that goes, for me, it was just a moment where I had to consider what the possible ramifications of Ultimate were. So you're playing a sport. There's a chance you can get injured. You know, like, there's a chance that when you step out of this game, you're going to be stepping out, like, on a stretcher. Or someone's going to be helping you from the field. So I had to make my peace with that before I played. I had to say, okay, I'm going into this. I'm choosing to play this game. And whether I want to get hurt or whether anyone wants to hurt me, it might happen anyway. So I just have to be comfortable with that.
That's like very the idea introspective.
It has to be.
So this is your meditative
right.
point.
So that's that little moment. I'll take 2 or 3 minutes before I play, back when I took it seriously at least, and just get myself solid and right and be like, look, these people aren't out here trying to hurt you, but that doesn't mean that they won't possibly hurt you. And so you just have to be prepared for what troubles you about sports.
Sort of an acceptance of it. Yeah, I like that. So when you're talking about the meditative moment, like, I think about this a lot. I did it less when I played Ultimate, and perhaps it was because I was on the defensive side and I was with a group of guys that were, let's say, less than meditative about their pregame rituals.
At least externally.
But I definitely remember it from playing my years playing soccer. I would show up to the field 3 hours before the game and sit in the middle of it and just visualize the goals I was going to score that day, how they were going to play out, how it was going to happen. Turns out I'm not psychic and they never worked out that way. But it helped, like, transition the state of mind. And you think about, you know, you could certainly see players doing this in sports. I was watching actually a video of Brian Dawkins, the way he did his entrance, which was insane.
This is the one where he's like,
oh, he's almost
stomping
convulsing.
On the ground. Yeah.
And no, then he has a private moment with the ball where he's just kind of hanging out with the football.
He was always one of my favorite players.
And he's kind of calming the ball down while the crowd is watching.
And this is like Kevin Garnett headbutting the stanchion and like talking to it.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing.
What is he
doing?
He's
getting himself ready for basketball.
But the thing is that prior to that entrance, Dawkins was famous for separating himself from everybody.
Famous for being extraordinarily religious, extraordinarily quiet, extraordinarily gracious. And then he turned himself into this Weapon X when he got onto the field.
Terrifying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's that transitional state thing too. And so I think that when we look at the way players use ritual or even superstition, I mean, superstition maybe crossed the line. Baseball's crazy with it, right? There's all kinds of, like, you know, wearing the same socks, not shaving your beard. There's a young kid I was reading about today, and his name is not coming to me. He's a pitcher, but he spends the first part of his warm-up throwing balls from the corner of left field to third base.
Yeah.
You know, and which I don't think is probably recommended pitching warm-up.
Well,
but
you
it's part
get
of
your
his,
lung toss in.
You get your power in. I get it. But, you know, there's all sorts of, like, little things that people do. But I think that the way I've always viewed the kind of ritualistic stuff is really about the reset and resetting your mind. And then you get into the team stuff. Let's talk about the team stuff a little bit. What players do with their teammates, that's important.
So, I mean, the general idea on that is you just want to wake your body up, get it back to a state where it's ready to perform at its highest level. So you've gone through practices and you've played these other games, and you just want to find a way to return to that state. And if you have, like, lingering muscle issues, or if you have soreness, or you've been like, you want to get all of that out and just get back to that state where you just sort of execute. So the thing that you need to do is you need to work on individual skills and individual preparedness, but you also need to do some team-level drills where you're interacting with other players. So in basketball, that takes the form of just having a guy guard you a little bit, doing, like, working on a couple moves here and there just so you get used to it. But in Ultimate, it often takes the place of you need more complex drills. You need to have people making decisions a little bit before they play, just to make decisions at game speed. Get into that team game state mind.
That does seem to be the impression that I get from watching warm-ups. Whether that's true or not, I often wonder. I sometimes feel like when I watch an Ultimate warm-up, and now we're transitioning away from their other sports, so let's talk a little bit about when I watch an MLU warm-up specifically.
Yeah.
There's a lot of live gameplay, type of things. And that particular one is always more surprising to me, because in other sports, I never did much of that. It was like, you already know how to play this game. What do we need to wake up in you that's important? All right, is it windy, right? So in soccer, is it windy? Yeah, it's a little windy. So whoever takes corner kicks is going to take 10 corner kicks, and whoever is on the other end of them is going to be in the box dealing with them, just to get used to doing that.
Part of it is...
So it's more specific to the conditions.
And I think part of that is to do with, in ultimate, if you throw lazily, you can give the disc to the other team. Like if you take your first throw and don't take consideration of the mark, if you like loft it out there a little bit, you're not necessarily going to... Like you might have an early turnover. You want to get players to execute perfectly before, like... It's really difficult for me to describe, but you need to get into this state where you're not like throwing the disc to a space. You're just dialing it in. You're snapping it to the receiver's hands when you need to. You're putting it out in space when you need to. And you don't always gauge that well enough before you get into the game. If you don't see people moving at full speed, at some point during warmups, when you get into the game, you're seeing a speed that you're not ready for.
So the idea is to make your first point your fifth point.
Right. Well, yes.
And in a way.
And the thing that we always used to talk about in club, for example, was you always want to break through that first wall of tiredness. Like, we all know that first, like, you go for that first run and you're just like, you're like, I've been training all year. I don't know what my problem
There's
is.
No
and then you go for the
I'm
next run and you realize that you just had to get that out of you. And I think It's a similar mental state, because the value of that one single turnover is so important that you can't have it happen early on in the game and change the whole tenor of the game because your players weren't ready for that challenge.
So in essence, that live gameplay is playing the role of game speed.
Well, but this goes back to something we were talking about otherwise, is that you can't do one-on-one ultimate. So like basketball-wise, you can warm up your one-on-one moves and dribble around a little bit, play some...
You can actually warm up by yourself.
Defense. Yeah.
Like just shooting.
But with Frisbee,
exercises.
It's so contingent upon what your teammates are doing that you need to have that awareness as well.
Warming your throws up alone is really, really annoying.
I agree. That's the maximum time of off. That's a world ultimate.
That's a whole different thing entirely. So I would say that the other side of that too, though, is, okay, yes, I can understand. Let's do some game speed stuff. Let's get up to speed. Let's get up to seeing people move, how they're going to move, throwing the disc, how I'm going to throw it. Basically getting the jittery first couple points out of your system. I also completely understand warm-ups just in general, because you got to find out, not only, you got to find out, are there any injuries? Like, is there anything that's going to bother me during this game? Does this movement or this movement affect me? If I've never done a full-speed cut in my warm-ups, maybe there's something that's there that I don't know about.
Yep.
So you're going to discover that. And I've always been a fan of a little bit of contact pre-game, a little physicality to get you in the mode of that kind of thing. Because as much as, you know, we like to talk about Ultimate as a quote-unquote kind of non-contact sport, but we all know that there's a lot of contact in it, and you have to have the ability to play in those confines. So I get all that. I think that what worries me when I go to an MLU game, and I'm always there very early when I go.
That's the job.
So I get to see the whole thing, is that given the amount of time that teams might want, they tend to use it all.
Right.
In a way that I think sometimes is counterproductive, particularly on hot, sunny days. I see players out in the hot sun for 3 hours before the game. They might not be warming up the whole time, but they're tossing around. They're playing a little bit of disc golf, like talking. And all of this stuff is fine in terms of like their ability to, you know, start to hang out with their teammates, start to get a feel for the day and the wind and all that stuff. But that's a lot of time, of unnecessary time, being exposed to the sun, exposed to the heat. And I think that hits a point of detriment.
Well, yes, but let's keep in mind that not all of us are as fair-skinned as you are. So the sun is
Some
not
people
as much
like
of an
the
issue.
Sun.
I mean, you know, you can wear hats and all of that. But there is a little bit of this that goes back to the origin of Ultimate tends to be in tournaments.
Yeah.
So the state that most players are most comfortable playing in is a state of semi-exhaustion. So if you're playing four games in a day, you're not going to be fresh for four games. You're going to be fresh for a game and a half.
Maybe.
Two games if you're just one of those.
Depending on who you're playing to.
And who you are and what your role is and all of that. But the state that you're most comfortable in as a result of club or tournament structured ultimate is just exhaustion.
Well, and
running
generally
through that wall.
Generally the most important, hardest game you play is going to be in your most exhausted state.
So all your experiences tell you that in big games, I'm tired. When I make big plays, I'm already tired. So you're seeking a state that isn't necessarily the most beneficial for a single game. And this is one of the things that club tournaments and club players can have issues with when they get to the nationals level, where now they're playing one game on a day for semis and for finals.
They spread those games out a lot, yeah.
And if you're consistently playing three games in a day, four games in a day, and you don't have experience playing one game in a day, you're going to be having a more difficult time when you get to that higher level. Now, you can practice that, and you can mimic it, but that is not the same as going against an opponent who legitimately wants to beat you, as opposed to your own teammates who know this is practice and all of that.
Right. And I think it's going to be a challenge not only for, it's the challenge of switching back and forth between single game and tournament. And, you know, look, the MLU games have their own set of challenges sometimes. Mm-hmm. Travel is a thing. If you're on a bus for 2 hours, there's a different kind of warm-up you need to do.
And you just need to be out of the bus.
You also have to get out of the bus. We've certainly had occasions where traffic or other issues have made those buses later than they should be, and warm-up time gets compressed. And there's no doubt that you need strategies for that. And we've talked to players who have strategies for mm-hmm. it, who start warming up on the bus, which I'm not entirely sure how that works.
It helps that you're not driving.
That's big. Yeah, because I've definitely been late to tournaments and just walked out of the car onto the field.
But again, if you're not driving, you can be putting your cleats on and like stretching out, trying to get all.
Not if you're in a Honda Civic with five other people.
Well, then you use resistance. You push against them.
The resistance stretching. Yeah, that's good.
Push people in the car.
I love it. I think it's going to be interesting. I'd very much like to have a conversation with some of the players who have been through this and how they vary that warm up. I'm also interested to see how warming up for a single game evolves, how pregame rituals evolve over time, because we've already seen them evolve over the first mm-hmm. 3 years. And I think we're going to see more high school players playing single games, and that may transition into more college players playing single games. You're going to have more people used to that kind of format as we move on. So it'll be interesting to see. I want to change gears and directions a little bit here, but you talked a little bit about Club Ultimate, about Tournament mm-hmm. Ultimate, and not surprisingly, for anyone that follows you on Twitter,
Dustweet Rhodes, or Dustweet R, I changed it from Dustweet Rhodes, but if you go to that one, you'll get linked back to me anyway.
There you go.
Dustweetr.
There you go. Follow him if you don't already.
It can be interesting and divergent.
Yeah, it goes all over the place. Sometimes I tune into you halfway through a conversation, and I'm like, I actually don't know if he's talking about Ultimate or basketball at this point. I'm not.
Well, sometimes it's soccer. Champions League's coming up.
Champions
here
League is coming up, so soccer will get in the mix there. And we'll talk about your prejudice against league soccer in another time.
Love to.
Yeah, we'll get into it. But for now, you have, judging from what I've seen on Twitter, mm-hmm. been paying a lot of attention to Club Ultimate, and particularly statistics as it related to Club Ultimate, which is something that. Yeah. Exists barely.
It exists. There are people who have statistics about Club Ultimate.
Yes.
And it tends to be somebody who works for a team or is on a team or is associated with a team and just takes it upon themselves to do it. And they tend to do it just for their team. But not everyone's interested in sharing all of that information all of the time. And it's not always the information that I want anyway. So one of the reasons that I'm trying to do this is that working with the MLU over the last couple of years has sort of changed the way I look at Frisbee a little bit because of just all of the numbers that I'm seeing all of the time. What do those numbers mean? Mm. So like when Luke gives me data about how many throws per possession people average, how many touches per possession people average, what the average completion rate is, like any of these things, I understand that they exist in MLU and I can put them in that framework, but I can't put them in the framework of the Ultimate that I had played all the time before MLU. And I can't put them in the framework of understanding what this game is statistically. So like in baseball, for example, if you say somebody hits over 300, and I know there are any number of ways you can discredit batting average as the best statistic, but if you say a guy hits over 300, that still means he's a pretty good hitter.
Yeah.
What does that mean in Frisbee? And not just for individual players, but for a team. So I'm just trying to understand what this canvas of Ultimate is. Like we're all painting this game on a certain level, and some players are more spectacular and they have all these flourishes and all of that. And there are different styles to different games, but what is the basic game that we're looking at?
And so you have, in search of answering this question, and in case anyone out there like me, wonders what it is that Dusty does with his time. I've found out.
I didn't know I was being tracked.
There have been questions. Apparently, he watches Ultimate. So you've watched at least 60 games.
Yeah, I'm at about 60 games right now.
And those span...
They are mostly USAU Club Nationals level play.
Okay.
So like either at Club Nationals or teams who were at Club Nationals the previous year or the next year.
Gotcha.
Or some instances, like I've seen enough Ultimate to know that this game is Club Nationals level when I watch it. Exactly. And then like so some regionals games that don't involve two teams, that they can be very good games. And it's the same thing with, so I also tried to add in like Worlds games from all the various different Worlds formats that we do, and also add in European Championship games, and I've started to add in some Japanese Flying Disc Association games.
I've seen you talk about that a lot.
And then trying to add in some Colombian games as well, and just trying to get a better mix so that it's not just one thing, but it's all high level Ultimate. Like if I watch the game and, oh, these people can't throw, that's a game that I'm going to turn off and not pay any attention to. Or if one team's blowing the other one out to the tune of 15-1, it's irrelevant because the statistics fall apart at that point. But some of the things that are starting to stick out to me is that just about every offense completes passes at 3-4% higher than their defense on their team. There are exceptions. And most times, every 1 out of 10 throws or so is going to go into the end zone. Like just be a throw into the end zone, a potential scoring opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And as you sort of look at these numbers and you compare them to the MLU, they're strikingly similar. Are they identical? No, but they're really similar. And one of the data points that I've enjoyed looking at the most as a sort of baseline judge of how efficient and good a team is possessions per goal.
Possessions per goal.
So on offense, you receive the disc and you score without turning it over. That's one possession, one goal. Possession per one goal. If you're on defense and you get a block and then you have one possession, you score on your first possession, that's one possession per goal.
Gotcha.
Generally, a good team has, or let's say a very good team, they will convert at under 2 possessions per goal. A pretty good team is like around 2. If you're getting up into the 3 range, 3 possessions per goal, you're not doing well. You're going to lose that
you're
game.
You're going to have a bad game.
And in club, you can definitively say whichever team takes fewer possessions per goal to score, they win. If you deal with the end of quarters where some possessions end without goals, you could conceivably have a team that has more possessions per goal in the MLU but still wins, but it would be a very narrow sort of band.
You could also see a situation where a team might take a lot of possessions to score on their D-line, but they get...
But it balances
exponentially
out.
Yeah, you're right. It does balance out.
Every single time, the other team has at least one possession there. So the other team's possessions per goal rise with your team's. So you don't get a wide variation between two teams in one game. And then you can compare across games to see what the general tenor of those games is.
It's obviously fascinating stuff.
And, nice to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is the problem. It's getting me hooked on numbers, too, because I had Luke, and you can tell it's Luke because I'm holding a poster.
The classic Luke piece of paper.
If you come see his desk sometime, Luke Ryan, our statistics guru, his wall next to him is covered with post-it notes, and I've also noticed the details. But, you know, your thing carries out, right? Boston, 2-time champions. Could have easily been 3, but for, you know, little things here or there.
DC playing dominantly that year is what you're
saying. They were so good that year. Yeah, I can remember. But Boston, you know, their offense averaged 1.78 possessions per goals over all 3 seasons. Their defense, 2.06.
Yep.
And, you know, so overall 1.88, and they've been the dominant team, and that's clearly dominant level numbers. I think what's interesting about that is how close those numbers are to what you specified as being dominant. And it brings me, I think, you know, look, we're going to have you on again very soon.
Much more to talk about.
And we're going to dig into the club stats that you've been working with, compare them to MLU stats. But what I thought was very interesting and what I've noted is you've watched Ultimate played in Japan, Ultimate played in Colombia, Ultimate played in Europe, Ultimate played in the U.S. You've watched WIFDIF, USAU,
Oh, Canada, too. I forgot
Canada.
Jeez, CUA.
MLU, right? Yeah. You've seen all of these different varieties of Ultimate, and you. What is your one takeaway from that? You want to tell everybody what your one takeaway is?
To simply put it, it's the same game. All of these games are the same game. The rule variations that we're using in different rules, WFDF rules versus USAU rules versus MLU rules versus AUDL rules, the offensive possessions, if you get under two, you're doing really well. If you get over two, you're starting to be good. If you get up near three, you're doing poorly. Completion percentages, they tend to be on offense about 93 or 92% across the board. Men's, women's, mixed, it's all about the same. And the defensive team is just a little bit below that over and over and over again. So it's the same game. Different stalls, different methods of officiation, different ways of resolving. Just, it's the same game. It's all the same. To call it something different is false. There's a reason Ultimate is in the title of all of those organizations, with the exception of those who choose Flying Disc.
Flying Disc. Well, there you go. There you have it. We're all playing the same game. And we're going to come back. We're going to play the same game again, where we talk for basketball. Too long on two topics. We begin at basketball. We end at Ultimate. That's all the time we have, though, for today. Thank you again to Dusty. And say it one more time for the kids. At?
DustWeetR. DustWeetR.
And you can get me at Nick Darling, NIC Darling. and we look forward to seeing you next time on Cleats and Cufflinks.